I'm joined today by jazz guitarist Roland Gresham. How you doing, Roland?
Hey, Dr. Franklin, I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I want to introduce to some and reintroduce to others Roland here. He has an interesting story. So let's go back and start from the beginning. You were born or a native of Nashville, Tennessee.
That's
Talk
correct.
A bit about your formative years and some of the memories that you have of growing up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Sure. I was born in January of 1956, and my dad was a jazz guitarist in Nashville, and he locally he was known as Big Red. My dad was a big guy, kind of we used to have relatives that called him Tarzan. Because he was a really big, strong guy, had those big old hands like baseball gloves. But yet he was a fan of Wes Montgomery. And of course, when I was a little boy, I didn't know how to play guitar, but they have pictures of me when I was about 2 or 3 years old with one of those little plastic guitars. And I always laugh when I look at that because nobody, including myself, nor my parents knew that I was going to actually play. And I was the first of four boys, so I'm the oldest, and I've got three younger brothers. None of them play anything. And so I think I was just meant to follow after my dad. And my dad played in the local clubs. He never really did record. I don't know that he traveled very far. Maybe he played a couple of times in Memphis, Tennessee, about 3 hours away. But that was my first inspiration. My dad showed me three chords when I was about maybe 6, 7 years old. He said, this is how you make a C chord, and this is how you make a G chord, and then this is an F chord. He said, if you just keep practicing those, and then we'll see how you do. But I just kind of took it from there, and by the time I was about 13, 14 years old, I used to listen to the radio a lot, and I mean, whatever came on the radio, Elvis Presley, the Isleys, the Temptations, I would just grab my guitar and just play along with it. And before you know it, I could play anything that I wanted to play. If I knew it in my head, I could play it.
Well, that's great.
I never did learn the scales, you know, da-da-da-da. I never did do that and never learned to read music. So everyone around me always says, Roland, you just have a natural gift to play.
So you are going to give some props and credits to Dad, right, for
pushing you in
this direction?
Oh, yeah. And also, you know, I mentioned that he was a fan of Wes Montgomery. And so he had just tons of Wes Montgomery records. So I was hearing those in the house when my dad was playing along. And then even when my parents would go to the grocery store, and I'm about 9, 10 years old, I just go in there where the record player was, and I probably scratched half his record. But I would put him on and just sit there listening. Wow, Canadian Sunset, bop it on. You know, I'm just listening to all these different tunes, and it just helped to feed that jazz appreciation. And then by the time I was in my early 20s is when I heard George Benson when he put out that Breezin' album. And I bought that album and put it on a Saturday night. And I must have listened to it till 2 or 3 in the morning. And the next week when I played at my church, I had 5 people saying, you sound like George Benson. I'm sorry. I kind of brainwashed myself.
What was so intriguing, invigorating, and exciting about that tune to you?
Well, I think George Benson's style, I know that he got some of his style from Wes Montgomery. But George Benson, with his speed, and I always say it's just his selection of notes, and it's kind of hard to explain it, but just when I heard him doing those different expressions, and it just kind of got in me. And again, I didn't sit down and say, I want to learn how to play like that. I just listened to it, and next thing you know, I'm playing the same way, and I don't want to make it sound like I think that I play just like George, but I play in the same style.
Very interesting. George Benson is certainly a role model to not you, but quite a few other musicians locally, nationally, internationally, worldwide.
Correct.
And check that box for George. Talk a bit also about Do you recall your first public performance? And where was it at? And what did you play?
Well, actually, I believe my first public performance was actually my very first was at church. My dad was proud to tell people that he had a son that could play. I was about 15 years old. And we did one of those old spirituals, Precious Lord, Take My Hand. And I guess because I was nervous, because you got about 150 people staring at me. And so I played the song with the wrong tempo. I think I was playing it slower than we should have. And so I remember it just like it happened yesterday. He just stopped me and said, ladies and gentlemen, we have a technical problem. Just give us a second. And then he told me, he said, remember the tempo? I said, oh, that's right. And then from there, we finished the song and everybody was saying after the service, man, you really sound good. You sounded like your daddy. And so that was my first one. And then when I started in high school, we lived in Unionville, Tennessee with my grandmother. And that first year as a freshman, they had a talent show. And I entered that and played a little song that I made up about some girl that used to live across the street from us. It was called Mary. Very simple song. It was just me on my guitar, no accompaniment. And I won the talent show. And so those were my first two public appearances. And I believe after that, I played at church some more as I got older and people kept calling, can you play for church? Do a special selection. And I believe that was my training ground, because as I got older into my 20s, and actually in 1988 is when I resigned from my job as an electrician to do this music full time. And so if I was playing in front of 100 people or 2,000, 3,000 people, I didn't feel nervous because I had been playing in front of people ever since I was 15, 16 years old. And so it was sort of a training ground for me. And on the construction site, there was a guy that had a guitar there one day, and he was playing some country music, and I was just standing there looking at him. He said, do you play? I said, well, yeah, but I play a different type. He said, well, here, play something. And I just started playing The Shadow of Your Smile, Misty. And so the talk was going around the job. Hey, that guy that works in the electrician shop, he can play a guitar. And so the more people heard me, they started saying, man, if I played a guitar like that, I wouldn't be doing construction work. And I said, well, I can't just quit my job. I have to have some sort of plan in place for it to work. And so long story short, that led to me recording some other cassette tapes and then CDs. And I started getting these different connections. And again, it started off just being me playing at different churches locally. And in 1992, I believe, I was in California doing a concert at one of the churches there. And someone told me about this big church. I think it was in Southern California. The church was called Loveland. And so I went there and played one song and sold 300 tapes after the service. And I said, hey, I think I'm stumbling onto something. oh my goodness, I have played at churches throughout the United States. I've played at churches in Canada, London, England, Jamaica, Bermuda. And I've done all this without having an agent or a manager. It's just been sort of word of mouth. And so it's been a blessing to be able to do that and do it for a living ever since 1988.
Well, one has to follow. Well, one sometimes follows his passion. And right. You quit your job as an electrician.
Correct.
And you decided to go into music. How difficult of a decision was that financially, and any regrets presently?
No regrets, but it's a very up and down type of thing, because you can never guarantee the audience size. You can never guarantee how many people, even if you've got 1,000 people there, there's no way to guarantee how many are going to come out there and buy your CDs. And I've played at several churches where they say, we have a special guest and he's going to play a selection and we want you all to support him, go out there and buy CDs. And 1,000, 2,000 people there, and I'm set up at the table and they're walking by. We in Georgia, just walking out the door like, hey, wait a minute. But of course, you know, those are not paid engagements. So I'm just going by faith. And so sometimes it's a feast and sometimes it's famine. But I don't regret doing it, because I have had countless numbers of people to tell me how much they were blessed by my music. I've had ladies coming up to the table with tears in their eyes, and I'm wondering, what's wrong with her? And they would say, Mr. Gresham, I just want you to know that I'm still feeling the touch of the Holy Spirit while you were playing that song. And it's not just the Christian music you were playing. I just was feeling something special. And so I don't know what it was they were feeling, but it's just a blessing to know that people are moved by my music. So a lot of times it's not the money, but just the fact that someone was touched by what I play.
That's an interesting point, because as a professional, as a person who puts themselves out for the public, to public scrutiny, when you right. touch one person, if you touch a million people, if you touch one person, mm-hmm. it's as rewarding as if you touched a million, correct? You
feel that? Exactly, exactly. I mean, it's a good feeling to know that someone was moved. And when I'm playing, you know, I'm not playing saying, I hope somebody's going to be moved by this. I'm just playing what I feel. But I'm always praying that someone would be touched. And I've had even people telling me that they came and joined the church because they heard me play one day. They weren't Christians, but they heard me play at this church, and they decided, you know what? I think I'm going to join the church. And so you never know what it is that God has in store for not just me, but the people that are listening.
So you now are a resident of Huntsville, Alabama. Is that correct?
I actually live in a little town just 20 miles west of Huntsville's Athens, Alabama.
Okay.
And, we kind of live out in the country where you can actually see the stars at night.
That's got to be a beautiful, beautiful sight. That perhaps is even inspiring musically to you.
Oh, yes. There's a recording that I did. I gave it the title, Beauty Beyond the Senses. And it's really just a collection of tunes that I composed. And it's music meant to just take the stress away, because, you know, we live in a world where so many people, no matter where they are, have stressful things in their life. And so I call this Beauty Beyond the Senses. And when you listen to it, there's one song on there called When It Rains, and and there's no singing on it. It's just instrumental. And I got a lot of that inspiration from being out here in the country and just looking and seeing the trees moving in the wind and the blue skies and birds flying by. And so there are several people that have told me, man, we like all that other stuff you've done, but that Beauty Beyond the Senses, oh my goodness. And so I think they're just enjoying the fact that it's so relaxing.
Well, that's very interesting in terms of relaxing, mm-hmm. because your CD that you shared with me, and that I will share excerpts with our audience, Memories of Michael Jackson.
Yes, sir.
Talk a bit about Michael Jackson, why you felt compelled to do this CD in tribute to him, or memories of him. And the tune Bad, that's a really, really, all the tunes are great. I'm just telling listeners just like it is.
Yes, sir.
But talk about Bad and some of the other cuts on the CD.
Well, it's so funny. I live in North Alabama. And they used to have a jazz festival in Birmingham. It was called Jazz in the Park. So the guy who was over that, I think he heard me play at his wife's church one day that he was there with her and I was visiting. So he said, man, we want you to play at Jazz in the Park. So I did about two or three of them, this annual thing that they have every September. So this particular year, it's been about 9-10 years ago now, it was raining, so they moved it indoors. They had it at the Boutwell Auditorium. So I was the opening act for a guy that played the saxophone. So when I came out to do my second song, I said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do one of Michael Jackson's songs. This is Bad. And so I hope you guys enjoy it. And so we didn't have any background vocalists. I just asked the musicians, can y'all play this? And they were like, yeah, we know that. So when we started off, boom, doom, 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 the whole audience of about 600 people got on their feet, and I'm standing there looking at them like, wow, and they're rocking to the music. Thank you. and everybody was yelling, "Thriller, Billy Queen." Up to the mic, and I was going to say, "Now we're going to play a song by the Isleys," and I started chuckling. And I said, "Now wait a minute, you guys, this is not a trip." And before I could finish it, I said, "Hey, you should do a tribute to Michael Jackson." And I got the idea from the audience. And so as soon as I left from there, I started writing down the different Michael Jackson songs that I liked and would want to do as an instrumental. And I had a list of about 30 songs, you know, because he had so many hits. But I finally narrowed it down to those 11 or 12. And so, but that's where that inspiration came from. And I wish that I had thought of that many years before. But everyone that's heard it said, "Man, listen, I don't know how you came up with these ideas, but this is awesome."
So Michael Jackson as a performer, mm-hmm. What did you think of him as a performer and his spanning so many decades of music with musical hits and music that touched and moved the souls of people around the world? What did you think of that?
Well, I thought that he was just another one of those people that, you know, they're put here on the planet and they just have that gift. You know, he displayed it when he was a little boy singing with the Jackson 5. And then by the time he did his first solo performance, I was like, I thought they was something with the Jackson 5, but this brother's on another level. And then just each recording that he did was like more incredible than the last one. And so I think that's why he was so popular, because he was so unique. And then he had the gift of songwriting. And then he connected with people like Rod Temperton, who wrote all those other songs like Thriller and what have you. And it was just so unique. And, you know, to see the audience when he was in Wembley Stadium, really anywhere he went, got all these people, male and female, passing out just from the excitement of being in the audience with him. I believe a lot of those people didn't even hear what he was singing. They just were thrilled to just be there in the audience. But he was a one-of-a-kind performer. And I'm sharing, like a lot of people have said, he's gone too soon, but he was incredible.
You mentioned Wembley Stadium. You yourself have performed internationally, London, England, Bermuda, and the Caribbean. Yes. I'd like for you, maybe music inspires us and audiences in a different way, but it's uplifting, it's positive. It just brings audiences to tears. I ask you to just share some of your observations of audiences in some of the places that you have performed internationally, London, England, Bermuda, and the Caribbean. Just to give our audience a sample of the type of feedback and feeling that you receive from audiences in those locations.
Sure. You know, when I went to London, England, there was a gentleman there that had a couple of friends of mine from Nashville. They had been to London a couple of times. He had invited them. And then I think, I've forgotten where he... I remember now. He saw me at a big meeting up in St. Louis, and he said, "Listen, I'm going to have you come to London, England." So March of 2001, he invited me, and I had just gotten married that January. So he had me and my wife come, and everyone there, just like in Bermuda and other places, I think people are first moved by the fact that I didn't learn to play music the traditional way, studying scales, having a teacher. You know, it didn't take lessons where I've got to go to the take my guitar lessons every week and gradually learn to play. So I think that's the thing that moves people so much. They're like, the way that you play, and it's not like you're playing trying to you're not playing trying to impress the audience. You're just playing what you feel. But when you play, we're feeling, it's like, I tell you something I've heard many times over the years. People will say, man, it was almost like that guitar was singing. And so they call that playing lyrically. And so you're playing your instrument in the same way that a person would sing it if they were singing that same song. So another one of the gifts that I have, I guess, you know, to be able to play that way. And I've always said since I was in my early 20s, I'm a frustrated singer. I don't have the voice for singing, although people say, you sound like you could be a singer, but I don't have faith in myself to do that. But when I'm playing my guitar, I'm playing what I would sing if I was singing.
Let me just ask you a question. Are you a modest man?
Well, let's just say this. I try to be, because I've watched a lot of artists over the years, and some of them gospel artists. And you would think that gospel artists should be modest and humble, and a lot of them are not. So, but anyway, I just believe that it's always good to downplay your own abilities and then let the people tell you, oh man, no, you're wonderful, but you don't go around saying, hey, I'm the best guitar player in town. Nobody can outplay. You know, that's not a good thing to do.
Okay, we're running toward the end of our segment, and I'm certainly going to allow our listeners to hear some of your fantastic musical expertise from your CD here. But I'd like to ask you a question. If you were writing a song about yourself, how would it go, or what would be the title and why?
A song about myself. Now, would this be an instrumental song, or does it matter?
I'll give you the choice.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? I would probably give it a title, and you put me on the spot. You reminded me of a church I was at in California one time. The guy said, play something. Just imagine you appearing in heaven. What would that be like? Play a song, like make up a song. So anyway, I would probably give it the title Humble Servant. And I would give it that title because I think there are too many people who have forgotten that we all should be humble servants of our neighbors, our friends, our family, and we should do whatever we can to help other people. And I think that's what makes a person great, to look at themselves not as someone great, but just as someone who maybe is blessed with a particular gift. Other people who are blessed with money, I think they should be humble enough to want to help people and not just, no, this is all mine. You got to get your own. So I would probably give that song. Matter of fact, you give me an idea. I might need to write that down. Humble Servant, which would actually be the CD title, and that would be the title song.
Happy to have been of some assistance here.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you to share with the audience, if listeners wanted to sample your music, find your CD, or contact you, how might they do so?
Oh, sure. My website is www.roland.gresham.com. And there on my website, you can see all the recordings that I've done. And then the Michael Jackson Project, Memories of Michael Jackson, that's available on my website. For those who are old school and want to get the physical copy, they can get that from the website, or they can download it. And then if they're new school, they can go to Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, all of those platforms. But the Memories of Michael Jackson is the only one that I have on those platforms. Everything else is still in the old school, just from my website. And then you can download it from there also.
Roland Gresham, jazz guitarist, a very humble servant, humble professional, humble musician, great person to have spent some time with today. Thank you, sir, for being a guest today on Like It Is.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is. We're going to trail out with music from Roland Gresham.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.